Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into a special podcast version of Preds Insiders. ESPN 102.5 The Game and TheGameNashville.com. Ryan Porth back from vacation and joined in studio for the next little bit by Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Adam, thank you for hopping in here and talking some Preds and Victor Arvidsson trade that went down last Thursday.
Yes, well, we're recording this on Tuesday morning. We have just completed Robbie and Rex Road, filling in for Joe this week while he's on vacation. So I just happened to be in the building, so why not?
So April 6th, 2019, do you know the significance of that date?
April 6th, 2019. No.
That is the night where Victor Arvidsson set the single-season goal record in Nashville Predators history when he scored his 34th goal against the Chicago Blackhawks in the regular season finale where the Preds won the Central Division. That was really the last night of that Smashville magic that had been brewing for a few years before it went into a little bit of a hiatus as the team went into a little bit of a hiatus, I guess you could say. At that point, I think a lot of Preds fans would have said that Victor Arvidsson had a bright future with the Nashville Predators. It was towards the beginning of his contract. And ever since then, he has scored 25 goals in 107 regular season games. Victor Arvidsson obviously has taken a step back in his NHL career from a production standpoint. So, Adam, Thursday, Victor Arvidsson gets traded to the LA Kings in exchange for a 2021 second round pick and a 2022 third round pick. I want to break down a lot of different layers from this trade. First of all, in your opinion, why did it get to this point where Arvidsson is being traded 2 years after he set the single season goal record for the Preds with 34 in 2018-19?
Well, think about where he has been. Since then, he's played 107 games over the past two seasons. He has scored 25 total goals in those 107 games. It became clear to those of us who watch the Predators regularly, including those within the organization, that Arvidsson's game was in decline, and largely because of injuries. We regularly reference the Robert Bortuzzo crosscheck in November 2019. As sort of the beginning of the end, so to speak, for the Victor Arvidsson that we came to know and fans grew to love here in Nashville. But it just felt like his status as a go-to guy had diminished because of those injuries, because of the decline in production. And David Poile made reference to that in his interview with Darren Donning and Chase after the trade was announced, that Arvidsson felt like he might need a fresh start. The organization believed the same thing, and I think the Predators were wise to trade Arvidsson to the Kings, a team that's sort of exiting a rebuild, or at least close to exiting a rebuild. You know, he can provide veteran leadership and goal scoring to their top six, and as David Poile said in that interview, oftentimes when a player gets traded and gets a change of scenery, they're buoyed by it. They start off really well. You know, if Victor Arvidsson starts the season next year with the Los Angeles Kings and is scoring goals upon goals upon goals, you know, wouldn't shock me in the slightest. But I think there was concern and skepticism within the organization that Arvidsson was not going to reach those 2018-19 heights with them again. And I think they were wise to move on from him.
So you referenced the Robert Bortuzzo hit, which happened in November of
2019.
And in the 16-17, 17-18, 18-19 seasons, plus the first 22 games of the 19-20 season, which was really Arvidsson's peak with the Nashville Predators, 185 points in 238 games. That's a .77 points per game rate for Victor Arvidsson. In the 85 regular season games since the Bortuzzo hit, He has registered 38 points in those 85 games, which is a 0.45 point per game rate, which is a pretty steep drop off from a production standpoint. Now, he came back, I believe, right around the time that Peter Laviolette was let go as head coach. So the injury isn't the only thing that has occurred in that time frame in the last 85 regular season games. Do you feel like he was at all a bad fit with John Hines, or do you focus solely on the injury aspect of a lot of injuries stacking up on Arvidsson and gradually taking his toll?
No, well, what, like I said, his status as a go-to guy had declined. But I went back and I looked at Arvidsson's ice time. I looked at his ice time over all of last season, just during the regular, or this past season rather. Throughout the regular season, he averaged about 16 and a half minutes total per game, which was fifth among forwards on the team. I think the four forwards who had more, not necessarily in this order, Mikael Granlund, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Callie Yarncroke. If you go back to the previous season, the 1920 season, and simply isolate the 28 games that John Hines coached, Arvidsson had about 15 and a half minutes of ice time per game. So he saw nearly more than a minute more ice time per game this past season under John Hines than he did in the half season under John Hines 2 years ago. So that would suggest to me that he was getting opportunities. Was he playing the 19-ish minutes that he was playing under Peter Laviolette? No. But he was not an afterthought. I just think that the production wasn't there, and he wasn't driving the offense in the same way. And as we've learned from John Hines, that just because you're paid a lot of money doesn't mean that you're going to get, you know, you're granted immunity from, you know, from being held accountable for your lack of production. And so I think when he was healthy, he was not the same. Even when he was in the lineup, he was not the same player. And John Hines found players such as Mikael Granlund, for example, who, as we know, was basically a non-factor under Peter Laviolette and has since become like the most important forward under John Hines based on ice time and assignments and such. You know, that pendulum swung in the other direction for Arvidsson. He wasn't as important. So I think that plus the production plus the injuries, I think it all built up. I felt like a fresh start was needed for both sides.
So I had Jeremy Kaag over on Preds Insiders a couple weeks ago, and he and I agreed that there was a better chance that Arvidsson would have been closer to 10 goals than he would have been at 30 goals if he had stayed in Nashville next season. Do you feel like that is still the case with him in LA, or do you see a greater chance of him bouncing back with the Kings than he would have had with the Preds if he had stuck around?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, part of it depends on who he plays with in LA. Is he playing with Anže Kopitar? Is he playing with someone like Quinton Byfield, you know, a up and coming, you know, top prospect? I mean, I think it depends on his line mates, and I'm not exactly sure who those are going to be with the Los Angeles Kings. You know, here, who were his line mates going to be? Eli Tolvanen replaced Arvidsson on the line Arvidsson was used to playing on with Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson. The second line last year was pretty solidified with Callie Yarncroke, Mikael Granlund, and Luke Cunningham. Like, where was Arvidsson going to play? Like, that, like, he was going to be in the bottom six on this team next season. Now, of course, the expansion draft plays into that, which may have opened another, you know, let's just say the Kraken took Yarncroke, then that could open a spot for Arvidsson. But it seemed like he was earmarked for maybe the third line. And so he's going to be a top six player in LA. So I think the likelihood of him, and he's going to be on the top power play again, he's going to get more opportunity. So I think he's more likely to bounce back with the Kings than he would have with the Predators.
Should Preds fans be okay with that? Like, if he goes to LA and scores 25, 30 goals this year and helps LA at least compete for a playoff spot or secure a playoff spot in the Pacific Division, like, should Preds fans be upset with the fact that the Kings would have used him more/differently and still gotten, you know, maybe not the grade A Victor Arvidsson, but a better version of Victor Arvidsson than what Nashville got out of him the last couple of seasons?
I mean, it's always easy to think that way. Like, if, like I said, let's just say Arvidsson gets off to a hot start. They're going to be Predators fans that say, the Predators should have never have traded Victor Arvidsson. I mean, it's inevitable. But, I mean, in the long term, it makes sense. I mean, Arvidsson – and then one thing that was interesting that David said on an interview on the Midday Show, he insinuated if he didn't come out outright and say it, is that, you know, Arvidsson might not have been protected in the expansion draft. And, you know, don't lose him for nothing. I mean, you have to think about those draft picks. That second round pick that the Predators are going to get is going to be higher in the second round because the Kings were a lottery team this year. So they have three picks within the top 50 of the draft. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. So, you know, to me, it just made too much sense. I mean, you know, we did a show, you know, right after the season ended, and we talked about, you know, what we thought the priority should be for the Predators this offseason. And I think I said to you, the first thing that I would do is trade Victor Arvidsson. And I think the return was good, considering where he is. I think there were a lot of outside pundits, those who cover the NHL but don't watch Nashville all the time, who were surprised, one, that they even traded Victor Arvidsson, and two, that this was the return that they got. I think those people have a 2018-19 view of Victor Arvidsson and not a 2019 through 2021 view of Victor Arvidsson.
Sure.
He was just not the same player.
So they get a 2021 second and a 2022 third in return from the LA Kings. You like that return for the Preds?
I do.
How does that compare to what you thought the Preds could get for him?
I thought that was what it was going to be. I was wondering if it might be just one draft pick, not two. So the fact that they got two, they got a second that's higher in the second round and a third, which could be higher in the third round, depending how the Kings play next season. I think that was a tidy piece of business by David Poile. I really have a hard time criticizing the deal and what they got out of it.
So if the expansion draft wasn't this summer, does this trade happen?
There might be less urgency. But I still think it would have happened. I think, as David admitted on the Midday Show, it played a huge role in the trade, the expansion draft. So perhaps it wouldn't have been as much urgency to get it done, especially before the expansion draft. But I still think it might have happened. Those of us who watch the Predators regularly, nobody thought that Victor Arvidsson was the same player anymore.
Right.
And I think the organization felt that way too. There was skepticism that he was going to be that player again, the one that scored 34 goals.
So speaking of the expansion draft, the Preds have until July 17th, that Saturday afternoon, to decide which players they will protect from the expansion draft process. You said earlier this offseason that you think it will be the 8-skater route for the Nashville Predators and not 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, to go with UC Saros as the one goalie being protected from Seattle. So does this change anything that you think they're going to do on that realm?
I still think they should go 5 defensemen. I really do. I think... they should protect Roman Josi because they have to, because he has a full no-movement clause. Matias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, Alex Carrier, and Dante Fabro. To me, I can't think of more than 3 forwards that this team should protect. I have a hard time doing it. You know,
Which 3 would those be?
To me, and I did this, we all had to do this over at The Athletic last month. We had to make our projection lists. I protected Philip Forsberg, Luke Cunningham, and Colton Sissons. So I left Victor Arvidsson exposed in my mock. I left Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson exposed. I left Kalle Yarncroke exposed. I left Yakov Trenin exposed. You know, to me, you know, Forsberg is a no-brainer.
Yep.
Luke Cunningham to me is also a no-brainer, yep, considering he's young, he's under team control. He played a big part in the team's resurgence in the second half of the season. And the reason why I chose Colton Sissons is because I remember after the 2017 Vegas expansion draft, when the Predators lost James Neal, basically the final decision came down to Kalle Yarncroke or James Neal. And after the expansion draft, I talked to David Poile and I asked him what was the ultimate factor in going with Kalle over James. And he called it a quote unquote business decision, because Kalle Yarncroke had 5 years left on his deal at that time. James had 1 year left on his deal. So you're looking at it from the same perspective. I think Colton has 5 years left on his deal, 4 or 5 years, and Kalle has 1. So if by the same logic, it's a wise business decision to protect Colton Sissons instead of Callie Yarncroke, even if Callie has a higher upside as a player. So I went with Colton Sissons with Luke Cunningham and Philip Forsberg.
What is the percentage chance in your mind that Poile calls up Ron Francis and is able to strike a deal to send Matt Duchene to Seattle?
10%.
Really?
Yes. I don't think it's very high. I think that Ron Francis knows that David Poile is over a barrel in this situation. And if I am a shrewd businessman, I am using that leverage to my advantage. I am asking for the world in order to take that contract. And I think David Poile will find the asking price to be too significant.
Okay. So let's say he doesn't take Duchene.
Mm-hmm.
And Poile goes with the eight skaters that you opt to protect, mm-hmm. as Adam Vingan, acting as David Poile. At that point, who do you think Ron Francis would take?
That's a good question. I think Callie Yarncroke. I think, he has 1 year left on his deal at a reasonable price. So you're not breaking the bank to bring in a player who can play in the top six. He does a little bit of everything. If it doesn't work out, you're not tethered to him for a long period of time. You know, he's a guy that can be flipped at the trade deadline if Seattle is not competitive, which, based on what we experienced with Vegas, is unlikely. I'm sure they'll be in the mix. To me, he has a proven track record. I know that, I've heard from a lot of fans who are concerned that maybe someone like Yakov Trenin could be on the move. I think Callie Yarncroke, his resume is more impressive. Of course, he's been in the league a lot longer. So to me, if the protection list is the one that I've chosen in my article last month, and I'm just saying the Predators are going to lose a player, I think it's Callie Yarncroke.
So back to the trade itself, Victor Arvidsson to LA, the reaction on Instagram was interesting from various Preds players, most notably Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, all either surprised or, in Philip Forsberg's case, on his Instagram story, giving the thumbs down emoji immediately following the trade. Were you surprised by the reaction from the players on social media?
No, I wasn't, because what else, would you expect? They lost a close friend and a longtime teammate. Of course, they're going to be upset, but as I saw those reactions and I saw the reactions to those reactions, I thought to myself, those players, not the three that you mentioned, the entire team, really, they bear some responsibility in this happening. How many chances did the players expect to get before they were broken up? If anything, David Poile gave them too many chances in the minds of a lot of people. So this is there are consequences to not getting the job done. And for the most part, the core has escaped that. And now they haven't. And, I don't see it as a sign of there being a mutiny underway in the dressing room. But I think the top players on this team, specifically those three forwards, Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchene, should start feeling a little uncomfortable. I think that, I think that's good for this team. And I think we saw it since the coaching change. I think a level of comfort set in with this group near the end of Pierre Laviolette's time, which I think was a detriment.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that John Hines has been willing to hold everybody accountable, I think, has been good for this team. So no coach is universally beloved by his players in any sport, even the ones that win championships. Do you think every player who's ever played for Bill Belichick loves Bill Belichick? What about, his quarterback of 10, 15 years? You think every player loves Nick Saban? You think every player loves Greg Popovich? No, of course not. But I think the reaction was what I expected. They lost a close friend. They lost a beloved teammate. But this is what happens when you don't get the job done.
Do you think this is the start of disassembling the core? Or do you feel like This is the trade, this is the wake-up call that this core needed to prove that they aren't safe and they all collectively need to play better?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure right now, if there's another trade of a core member on the horizon. We'll see what the expansion draft brings. But I do think, you know, like 2 years ago, you know, the Predators traded P.K. Subban, and P.K. was a member of this team for three seasons. He played a huge role in the team's success, but and he was a core player. I would consider him a core player. But, you know, he didn't grow up with this team like Victor Arvidsson did, sure. Philip Forsberg did, and to an extent even Ryan Johansson did. You know, I think the fact that it was Arvidsson, a homegrown player, you know, who came up through Milwaukee, you know, who ascended to the top line, who came out of nowhere to score 34 goals, you know, for, you know, to a lot of people. You know, I do think this is, you know, a sort of like a warning shot to the rest of the core. Like, none of y'all are safe except for Roman Josi. You know, that's how I think of it.
Rank these three in your mind most likely to be either be next or be off the team by the end of the offseason. Matt Duchene, Ryan Ellis, Ryan Johansson. 1, 2, 3.
One being the one I think is most likely
to be traded or let go.
That's tough because, to me, of those three players, the one that has the most value is Ryan Ellis.
Correct.
But I also believe he's not being traded, and I've been wrong before, but I also believe he's not being traded. So to me, I would say 1, Matt Duchene, 2, Ryan Johansson, 3, Ryan Ellis.
That is exactly how I thought you would answer it.
Hmm. Well, there you go.
So I'm in between your ears there, Adam.
What's your answer?
I mean, just in terms of likelihood, probably the same.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt Duchene, the Duchene-Johansson conundrum, to me, isn't really that big of a conundrum. Like, Duchene is the guy that you're trying to get rid of.
Yes.
To, A, get a square peg out of a round hole that he is becoming, like Kyle Turris did, and get rid of the contract.
Yeah.
$8 million.
I also think that Ryan Johansson seems to have bought into John Hines' vision. I'm less convinced of that about Matt Duchene.
Yeah, Johansson much more in my mind fits into the fabric of what they want to do what this team is about, what this franchise is about.
Yes.
Than Matt Duchene.
Agreed.
Last thing on this trade. This trade frees up $4.25 million of cap space for the next 3 years for the Nashville Predators.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, what does that mean for David Poile this offseason and beyond?
Well, they have a lot of their own to take care of. They have a lot of players to re-sign. From an unrestricted free agent standpoint, that class is headlined by Mikael Granlund. I think this goes a long way in getting him under contract with the Predators. There's also the potential of Pecorine returning and needing to have, money, allotted toward him. You know, it wouldn't shock me if the rest of the unrestricted free agents, Eric Halla, Brad Richardson, Eric Goodbranson, and Luca Spezza, do not return. Restricted free agent wise, they have a ton to do. UC Saros, Dante Favreau, Ellie Tolvanen, Tanner Jeannot, Matthew Olivier, Jeremy Davies. They've got a lot of players to sign. So I think a lot of that money should go toward re-signing players. But $4.25 million in a flat cap world is not an insignificant chunk of change. So the Predators do have close to $23 million, according to Cap Friendly, to work with this offseason. And, you know, I think most of it goes towards re-signing a lot of the important players.
So you wouldn't expect them to be very active in adding salary that isn't currently on the roster?
No, at least not in free agency. You know, the free agent class isn't star-studded forward-wise this offseason. There are some big names out there, but, you know, they're probably going to re-sign with their own teams, like Alex Ovechkin,
right.
Gabriel Landeskog. Taylor Hall is out there again. You know, an interesting player to me on the free agent market forward-wise is Zach Hyman, most recently of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think one thing that's important when it comes to the players that the Predators acquire this offseason, and I think you saw a little bit of it last offseason too, is sometimes it's not about finding the best player. It's about finding the right player. Like Taylor Hall, of course, you know, like let's use Taylor Hall as an example. Taylor Hall has a history with John Hines. We know that. You know, does Taylor Hall fit into what the Predators want to do? It's not about finding the best player. Sometimes it's about finding the right one. And like based on what I know about Zach Hyman, I think he could be a fit based on, you know, I think he is a John Hines type of player. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not. It's just when I look at the free agent market, he is a guy that if I were to, like, if all things being equal, he is a guy that I would target if I were looking for a free agent.
Adam Vingan does a phenomenal job covering the Nashville Predators for The Athletic. Adam, thank you as always.
My pleasure.
For Adam Vingan, I'm Ryan Porth. Next week, we'll get into the Stadium Series game that has been announced to be played at Nissan Stadium in February of 2022. And continue to look at an intriguing Predators offseason. That's all coming up next Monday at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.